Mike Lapatino, your old buddy Lappy, has been doing afternoon drives at WPLR since the late 80s.
I started in October of 1986 doing Psychedelic Sunday. And at that time, I was working down in Westport at a radio station. Capo left, and I went on in January of 1987.
January of 1987. So 35
years.
35 years of PLR's 50-year history.
Yeah, that's pretty.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I know.
There is no doubt you will forever hold the record for the longest run in any air shift on that radio station.
I think they should make me like a little crown that I can wear.
Where would you wear that exactly?
Everywhere.
Well, congratulations, brother.
Well, I really don't even think about that. You know, it's like. And you've been there, and quite frankly, just to get off the subject a quick second, you're the best guy to do these interviews, only because you grew up with this station. Was your life. I mean, since you was a kid. I lived down in Fairfield County and down in New York, so...
You were NEW, right? Scott Muni?
I didn't... What's that?
You were like an NEW Scott Muni guy. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. And the New York stations, and the New York AM stations when I was a kid, but it was all, that's what came in. Come around mid-80s when I was already in radio down at, in Westport, at WMMM, WDJF, which became Weeby. We were doing comedy radio on the AM station. And at that point, I heard about Smith and Barber. So I contacted Bruce, and we sort of became friends over the phone. And I sort of got an insight of what was going on in the building. And Gary Zanobi, of course, was a huge help.
Oh, great guy. I love him.
Well, yeah, you know him very well. Yeah. And, I got into PLR. That was...
I did some math on summer
of 86, because that's when I went up seeing Griffin.
I did some math on this. I'm not good at math, so this could be a little bit off. But based on 12 songs an hour the 35... Actually, this is not 35 years. So I did 33 years. So this number is even higher. I have that you've played an estimate 411,840 songs on PLR.
And yes, and I'm hopefully receiving a check.
A dollar for each one.
But we had some great times. And we still do. We still have, good times are, we had a little, setback this past year. But, there's a lot of great stuff on the horizon. I just enjoyed, come on.
The lineup when you started was Smith and Barber.
Was Smith and Barber, Christina Altwicker.
Christina.
You remember, you interned for her.
Yes.
Because I remember you used to come in with a briefcase to do the top 9 at 9.
Yeah.
I remember that, yeah. Jeez. And that's another story. I don't know if you want to go into what happened there. But and then it was me. Then it was Rockin' Mike Johnson.
Yeah. Oh, Rockin' Mike.
And it was Oresco on the overnight. Because Lynn Taylor was the production director.
Lynn Taylor.
Remember her? Yeah, Mary Jo Piplup, sweetheart of woman.
Oh, so great on the air. Loved her on the air.
Oh my God! Yeah, one of the we've been lucky at our station that we've had some of the best female voices ever.
Yeah,
starting off with Marcia Simon and everyone in between.
Strong women.
Yeah, exactly. in the radio business at that time, you have to be.
Yeah, that's true.
For both men and women, you need thick skin.
How many midday hosts have come and gone since you started that you can remember now?
So Christina Altwicker,
right?
And then after that, it was Tom Bass, the Bass Man.
Tom Bass. Yep. So Amanda was before Christina.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. I never knew her. I never knew Amanda. When I got there, she wasn't there.
All right. So Christina, Bassman.
Yeah, but you're right. She was the midday. And I think maybe she may have done some morning stuff. I don't know. But then it was then after Tom Bass, it was Pam Landry.
Wow.
You know, actually, Christine Stone, I think, filled in for a period.
Yeah, like in between.
But nothing long because she got a job programming the Fox. So yeah, Pam Landry, and Pam at that point was doing Weekend. She was coming on after me after Psychedelic Sunday.
She's another one. I got to tell you, her voice. I just love her sound on the air.
She is the perfect New York female rock disc jockey.
Yes,
you know. She's great. She's, she really is.
You know, I tried to hire her away when I was program director at WRCN.
Across the way, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We couldn't come up with the money.
Yeah, well, that, you know what? Well,
I'm glad, because it would have been weird, because I would have brought her over to Long Island, and then I would have left.
And then you...
All right, Pam. Glad you brought all your shit out here.
Yeah. See ya.
Yeah,
You're on your own. Yeah. No, she had a nice run at the station. Things didn't end so well, and it was sort of a bad time for her, I know.
It's tough. And it's a marriage.
What's that?
It's a marriage.
Oh, it is. It really is. It's very personal. I mean, well as anybody. How much of our lives we put into this.
No, but when you're at a certain radio station for a long period of time, it becomes ingrained in your DNA. First of all, being on the air becomes so important to who you are, but then the radio station becomes part of that as well. And then to leave that, it's like someone ripping your arm or your heart out.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. And very unconsolable and legitimately so for a while. But she got back up and got back into the radio.
Good.
I'm not sure what she's doing now. I think I heard she may even move down to Florida. I know she's a huge Mets fan, so she sees them spring training.
Right, the Mets.
But, yeah.
And then after Pam was Wiggy, right?
What's that?
Wiggy came on after, like, when Pam's run ended, Wiggy came in. Right?
No, because he was doing YBC.
Huh, so there was someone between.
Wait a minute. You should know. You were there. Who came on after you back then?
Wiggy.
It was?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's when he started doing middays.
He started doing middays. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So there was no one in between. Yeah, you would know. All right. Yeah, that was that.
And then now Phil.
And now Phil, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. All right, so those are the midday people you've seen come and go since. Because I think about this, I think,
we had a lot of night guys too.
I did nights, and we'll get to that. But I did nights. I left, went around the country, did all this shit, came back, and I've been there for 18 years. And every fucking day, you've been driving in and doing a shift on that station, and I think about all the stuff that's happened, all the stuff I've done every single day. You drove in and did your shift. It's remarkable. Yeah. So night shows. Mm. So it was Mike Johnson.
Dear Mike. You know, I say this all the time. He was one of the biggest fans of the radio station. You know, he would wear that, you know, that PLR jacket with such pride. So much so, and these were those big bomber jackets, that he would wear it in August. No kidding. No lie. 100 degrees outside. He's got a football jacket. Because he was so proud to work there. He was I got close with him during the time. It was a few years. And he got upset and left. I can't remember exactly what happened, but it was something really stupid that he did. And he certainly knew it afterwards, but he was a dear guy. And then after that, it was, remember Travis?
Yep.
Yeah. That's Rick Allison's buddy, so you know. Rick Allison got him in there.
Rick.
I liked the guy because I thought he was just kind of funny. He was, I can say it right. I mean, he was a true Southern boy, you know.
Yeah.
And meant well, but I don't know. And then there was another kid, Christian, that worked there. That I remember.
So that was after me.
Was that was after you left, right?
Yeah. So Travis, I think, to Mary Lee.
Yeah, then Mary Lee did nights too.
Yeah. Mary Lee. Wow. And then I took over. I was.
Well, how long did you do Camp Chaos for?
1990 to 1994.
That's it? I thought it's got to be longer than that.
Yeah, 4 years.
But then before that, you were doing your Camp Chaos overnight.
Camp overnight, right.
But that was before that, before 94. I mean, before Ronnie.
Yeah, so late 80s.
All right, yeah, yeah. Well, because she had the Camp Chaos thing. I'm surprised. I thought it was longer than that because Wednesday nights especially was... Wow. something that you no longer see in the radio industry, and that's fine. But at that time, things that were done were, having lively radio programs.
Lively.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Lively.
Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah,
imagination run wild.
We'll say live
everything,
fans.
Everything you think that we probably did, we did.
Yeah.
But... but that was the top 9 at 9.
Oh, Jesus.
That was a lot of fun. Sweeter than wine. Lovely girls.
We had live bands up there all the time. Mm. And everything that comes with having a live rock band at a rock station in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Went with that. So I leave. Then, Christian?
Chris, he was a kid out of a nice kid, a bright boy out of Southern. He was an intern, and then they put him on at night. And then I think Wiggy came in, because you know how sometimes he'll come in at night, and he noticed that there was nobody like around the building on the floor because they were all upstairs on the roof.
Jesus.
He had a whole bunch of like his college buddies. And I think that was the end of his stay there.
Yeah,
because that was first of all, it was no really. I mean, you could go up there and fall off it. So that was that. Then after him, I know Prodigy came on.
Glenn with two N's.
Oh, Glenn with yes, you're right. Glenn with two N's.
Right.
And he stayed on, I think, right up. Oh, I don't even remember now.
Jeez, yeah. Then there was someone I think in between before Prodigy. Then Prodigy.
Yeah.
Was Christine Stone in there somewhere?
Yes, we forgot about her.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at that point, Glenn was doing the overnights, and Christine was on at night.
Jeez.
No, Christine was doing the overnights. I don't think she ever, no, she did evenings.
She
I
did
don't
nights
know,
for a while, yeah.
Boy, I tell you, it's really, the bloodline is amazing.
Yeah, and Phil did nights for a little while, and Ashley's doing it now, and Prodigy and Ryan, and, the point I'm making is that you came in, did your shift every single day, and all of these other great air talents have come in and out around you, and you've been the solid, the rock right there, you know?
Hey, maybe I changed my name.
Yeah, Mike
Rockapino. Oh, no, just Rocky. And every
good.
Time you mention my name, I have the
Rocky.
Have the Rocky theme. God, never mind.
That's a lot. How many?
You can edit this stuff?
Not at all.
Oh, shit.
What about interviews? You're known for doing some great artist interviews.
That was the best thing. That was before Cox bought us in 2000 or 1999, and they really changed a lot of the stations, and that's the way they ran the business, and it's fine. You know as well as I to stay in this business, you have to learn to adapt, and that's all there is to it. But when I was at PLR, from when I got there, and doing Psychedelic Sunday at the same time, doing 6 days a week, which was great, man, I had Jack Bruce just spent the weekend with me, my God.
I was going to mention him because I remember I did the Saturday overnight into your Psychedelic Sunday show, and you walk in with this old guy, and I'm like, who the fuck is this?
Yeah.
It turns out it's Jack fucking Bruce.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing, even going deeper in music, having guys like a band Wishbone Ash, one of my favorite English rock bands out of the 70s, the lead guitar player, and I became very good friends. Andy Powell had him up on there. John Kay would come on up, and that's just on Psychedelic Sunday. And then during the week, remember, new music always came out on a Tuesday. And with that, a band would be playing at Toad's place. They would come up for the interview, and then we'd sponsor the concert there. And many times, you probably even ran the board or was on your show when we did them live.
Yeah.
But we did that all the time. So I, at least two interviews a week, and sometimes three.
You were so good at them.
I loved it. It was great. Simply because. You're usually getting them on their best behavior because they're promoting something.
Right.
But there are a couple of them that don't go that way, the Black Crowes.
Was Joey Kramer on his best behavior?
No, and it's funny you bring that up because I have the cassette. I have the air check at home here. And when I had a cassette recorder, I listened to it. And I cringe. I am such a fucking asshole.
Really?
I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed.
We have
that
to play
tape
this, Mike.
Will never see the light of day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's that's with me. And as a matter of fact, I don't even know where it is right now. But I listened to it, and I said, "John," and this was 1990.
Oh my God! This is they already released Pump.
Yeah, and it was, the thing back then, it was confused because I was kind of screwing around because at that point, everybody that we know, our friends and stuff, if they wanted to really get a hold of us, they would call the hotline. the phone number that nobody was supposed to have,
right.
Everybody had. So I was getting people calling me up pretending to be a Joey Kramer and doing that kind of stuff. So I was kind of, you know, anyhow. It was just a horrible interview.
Well, tell us, if we're never going to hear it, tell us a little bit about it.
Hmm?
Huh?
I'm sorry. I was taking a drink of my hint water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit about it.
Who, about Joey Kramer?
Yeah, the interview. What happened?
Nothing. It's just.
Nothing happened, but we'll never
hear it. It started off bad and just went downhill.
Oh. All right,
you know,
so
it was terrible.
What was the first bad moment that you thought, oh? That...
Well, it was the way I was phrasing my questions to him, that he was sort of not listening, paying attention in a way, but so he caught, like, the wrong drift, and then he got pissed off and swore. Now, back in 1990, when, you know, the guy goes, oh, yeah, what the fuck are you talking about? It was like, okay. So then all of a sudden, the gloves come on, you know.
Yeah.
Or the gloves come off, or whatever the expression goes. And then it just went downhill from there. Anything in particular, I really don't remember.
Yeah. But did he hang up? You hung up? How did that go?
No, we sort of said, I said, let's end this thing. We'll talk to you later. Good luck. But, Bob, that's it.
Yeah.
And
Joey Kramer, the drummer of Aerosmith. And then it just ended.
Yeah. But then again, that was one. The amount of people that I've interviewed that I've actually become real good friends with, is numerous. I'm the luckiest guy on the planet. I'm telling you right now.
Oh no, I've had some of those interviews where your intentions are good. You're a fan of the music, and then the next thing you know, the guy thinks you're fucking with him, and you can't bring it back. And it's just horrible.
That's exactly what you said. What happened?
Yeah.
And I have to find that cassette.
Oh, Mike, listen, the 50th anniversary. I know it makes you cringe, but people would really want to hear that. And it should be archived. This should be part of the radio station's history. We don't have a lot of the audio. We don't have a lot of photographs.
You know, I have a lot of audio, but I have it all on cassette. I'm sure you'd go on eBay and get a cassette player.
Even if you just gave us I have a cassette player. Even if you just gave the station the 15 seconds where he's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I bet there's some, there's definitely a lot of good clips on that, especially when he's getting pissed off at me.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing at it. You
were being you. And Joey Kramer's like, doesn't he know who I am? I'm the drummer of Aerosmith.
Yeah, and then like 3 years later, his car blew up, and everybody thought I did it.
At the gas station.
Yeah,
the gas station.
Yeah, because he lives, not too far from here. But,
right.
Yeah, but obviously, no. God.
And then you mentioned the Black Crowes.
Yeah, well, that was the only reason the Black Crowes came up and did interviews, because they never did, is because of their manager, Pete Angelus. His brother... Chris Angelus was a sales guy with us. So that was the hook. So they, Chris and Rich Robertson at that time, considered they're like 22, 23 years old, the biggest thing in 1991, and they had the egos were incredible. So they had the attitude of just coming in here thinking like they're being punished, you know. So, but we talked music. As soon as we just started talking music with Chris, things got a little bit better.
Do you remember when things got really bad with them?
Yes, I do. Because, I don't know if I could tell. Can we tell the stories? I'm gonna have to mention names.
There was an intern you had named Frank who had a big mouth.
Frank, the stupidest man in the world.
That was his name.
Yeah. who happens to be, I think he's a doctor now, down in Florida, environmentalist doctor. Seriously, I saw him a couple of years ago when I down when I was in Florida for a couple of weeks, and he's doing well. But anyhow, it has to do with one of the sales reps who was their road manager before they got signed to a record label. His name is Jim. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to go any further than that because I know he's had some ups and downs in his life, and he's a nice guy.
Great
so
guy,
anyhow, man. he was like, you know, he was really, you know, starstruck. The Black Crowes were up there. I knew them then, when, whatever. He says, I even took, I think it was Johnny Colt, the bass player. Oh, I took him to the emergency room to get shots in his dick because of, you know, chlamydia or some kind of sexually transmitted disease. And he said that to me and to Frank, the stupidest man in the world. So we're all in the studio and, you know, we're doing the interview. Then we went into some music. And then we started having a conversation where we started busting each other's balls. And then Frank comes out of nowhere and says, well, oh, that's it. It was dick warts. He says, well, at least I don't have dick warts like your bass player.
Yeah.
Well, they got up and they left. We went to the show that night, and Jim goes downstairs to the dressing room, not knowing any of this went on. And he was escorted out of Toast Place. I've never seen a guy so pissed off in all of his life. It was, oh, man, Toad's Place.
Oh, you have a lot of Toad's Place stories, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
All right, we'll play a game. We'll call the game Stories That May or May Not Have Happened.
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
Well, let's start with the Rolling Stones. You were there for that, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, again, it was, you probably had about 350 people, 400 people there. And, you know, of course, nobody really knew about it. They did really keep it secret. Again, there's no cell phones, no internet. And I remember Mike Sperndle called me and said, hey, listen, come down. He said nothing. He says, Jimmy's birthday party. We got down there. And when I got in there, Griffin was there, Wiggy, and Sam T. And Griffin said, hey, Stones are going to do an hour set. I said, what the fuck? And then you looked around and all the, you know, everybody knows the story. Phones were taped and all that kind of stuff. But so I went downstairs to where the, you remember where the dressing rooms are downstairs?
Yeah.
At Toast. So I'm standing just alongside there with, I can't even remember who I was with. And they filed in and
Jesus.
They walked right. And I'm like, can touch them.
And it's literally like Jesus. It's like a biblical figure. Yeah.
And the first thing that I'll always remember was how short they were, because I'm not a tall guy, but these guys, they're not tall at all. I thought they'd be giants, you know, only
right.
because the way we,
their
you know,
stature.
Look at this band, this iconic band.
I remember reading an email about swearing on a microphone in public and that we shouldn't do that. And we shouldn't get intoxicated when we're at radio station events. And like, you know, I'll bet money. I think I know who this is.
I had an email read to me by Griffin, John Griffin, the program, who's, you know, Wigmaster. Everybody knows that. And this is after doing the St. Patrick's Day. I can't wait for the parade next year. I'm with you. If you like it or not, I'm leading the parade with you next year.
Excellent.
But those parades, I mean, come on. So anyhow. I was in the parade with Gail Mitchell, and I can't remember who the other person was, but I think I can't remember the other. But anyway, so we're in the parade. No, I think it was Bootleg Bob. It was Bob Carano.
Jesus.
And so we're in there, and we're having a fun. We're drinking and everything else and, you know, taking pokes. I get to work on Monday. Griffin calls me into his office. He says, I don't want you to say a word. I want you to hear what I'm going to say to you right now and say that you understand, agree, and then leave. And he was as stern. And you know, when he gets mad and stern,
yeah.
He's scary.
Yeah.
And he was just like that. So I was shitting in my pants. He said, the drinking of beer and the smoking of marijuana in a radio station vehicle during the parade is a firing offense. Do you understand that? I said, yes, I do. Get out. I left. I wish I had a copy of that. Oh,
And that's
man.
Not even the email. That's not even the email I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's like the. But that was like late 80s. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. You went on Toad's Place stage, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
And just went crazy.
Oh, yeah. There was times when I was hammered. And again, I've over the past, you know, at least 20 years, things have been very mellow with me. But
yeah.
But back then, yeah, like I'd go, I remember distinctly Ginger Baker. I knew him from a couple of visits out in California, and we became kind of friends. He was good friends with a Terry Cohen, who was Terry Cohen. He was a record rep for Epic Records, who unfortunately passed away just about 2 years ago. But Ginger used to come up, and we'd go out with him. So he was playing with a band called Masters of Reality. What a great band.
Oh, right.
Remember those guys?
Yes.
They had like one album, maybe two. They played it, and they just rocked. Well, Ginger Baker was their drummer. He went on tour with them as the drummer, so it was awesome. Playing at Toad's Place. I go downstairs. Ginger, how you doing? What's going on? Hey, come on over. He always remembers me from... having marijuana cigarettes out in Catalina Island. So he said, I got something for you. And I went over there, and typical English guys, they, you know, roll pot with hashish on it, right? And at that point, I'm like four sheets to the wind. So come on, bring us on. So I went on stage, and I'm just half in a bag, and it's like, fucking Ginger Baker. and they're all, the band's all laughing, you know, and they sort of played me off. But I think Brian Phelps may have a copy of that. I'm sure he does.
Oh.
Because everything was filmed.
Oh, man.
That was something.
That may
and Toad,
so
they would drive me home.
That may have been the email that I read that...
It could have been.
It was coded, but I said, this has
the drinking of alcohol and the smoking of marijuana in a station vehicle, you know, during a parade is a firing offense. As it should be.
Yeah.
But who knew?
You know what? The station over 50 years grew from, you know, teenagers to adults.
Oh, yeah.
Really. And so everything that goes with that process... the station went through and the staff went through.
Yeah.
You're talking about rock and roll DJs. So, you know,
that's what we did. That's what we do.
Now, you and Jimmy Koplik are notoriously very, very close friends and did the Mike and Jimmy concert show.
Yeah. For about 10 years. That was
10
fun.
10 years. What can you tell us about Jimmy that maybe we don't know?
Well, he's probably one of the greatest human beings I think I know, as far as a man goes. He loved Andy, his wife. That was his high school. They dated since the eighth grade. She passed away. I think it's almost 4 years now. Devoted husband, incredible father, and an awesome grandfather. He's a very sweet and generous man. He would give the shirt off his back to him. And I'm just so proud that, you know, to be his friend. I spent time at his place in Florida a couple of years back. And it was nice because nobody was there. It was just him. And of course, his place is is beautiful, West Palm Beach.
Yeah, I was thinking it's got to be nice.
Oh, it is. You know, nice place, nice pool. Nothing opulent. You know what I mean? He's not like that, except with his cars.
Right.
You know, he's got Porsches. Why? Because he loves the cars. He's a nut for Porsches and fast cars. But going down there, we just kind of hung out and drove around in the golf cart. We didn't play golf because I was going to see a Dead show over at the Fort Lauderdale Arena there. There's a hockey team that plays there. I don't know who it is. Brand new arena. So I had tickets, and so he got me parking passes, and I got the park downstairs. But it was nice just to hang with him and talk. He's a very deep guy. Wears his heart in his sleeve, you know.
Yeah.
And he's sincere and honest about everything he does. He really is. Tomorrow, I don't know when this is, we're talking on Wednesday night, but Thursday mornings, Jimmy's on with you. You'll hear that from him.
Yeah,
this is sincere. This is the way he is.
So you and him share a love for the Grateful Dead. He was very close with that band. Did you ever get a chance to meet Jerry or Bob or any of those
guys? I never did. I got to see Jerry in front row a few times, and that was just an incredible experience. The only guys I interviewed from the Dead were Bobby Weir, but that was a phoner, Mickey Hart, Phil Lesh, and I think I'm not sure if I interviewed Billy Crutchman or not, but
you probably interviewed Bruce Hornsby when he was breaking with his solo album, you know.
Yeah, I think I may have interviewed him. He was never a member of the Dead.
Right, he toured with them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he toured, but he was never like an official member of the Dead. Actually, Jimmy's got stories about that. He was in the same room when Bobby Weir was talking to him on the phone saying, "We don't need you anymore." I guess more or less firing Hornsby.
Yeah,
or just letting him go for the tour.
It's incredibly awkward. It's like hearing someone asking for a divorce while you're sitting there, and like maybe I shouldn't be here.
Yeah, it's a.
That would be a great, you know, if there was a remote camera there just to see Jimmy's face. Like, what do I do now?
Exactly. Yeah, he's got. I mean, I keep telling him to, you know, sit down and write a book. I don't think he'll ever do that. It's too much work. And plus the fact, you know, he's 71 years old. This guy's working as hard as when he was 30.
Right.
You know the. I just saw him. We had lunch a couple of weeks ago. We met down at the new amphitheater, which you've been there, so you've seen it. It's going to be gorgeous.
Insane.
And but all he did, I was sitting at lunch. It was him and his attorney, Jim Sandler, another great guy. And you know, he's just rattling off these bookings for not only Xfinity, but you know, Oakdale as well, and the Hartford Amphitheater, or the Hartford Ellicott Amphitheater. Yeah, he's busy as can be.
Any names you want to drop now that you heard may or may not be coming?
I know one thing. Alice Cooper is coming. Devin Cully is coming. Who else is coming? I can't remember. Korn and Stain. And those are all going to be announced.
By the time you hear this, these shows may have already come and
gone. They could have, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Another one of your partners in crime, Wiggy.
Oh, well, you know, that's, you know, that's, you know, I, there's three people that if I should ever say three people I really owe my career to, would be number one, Gary Zenobia, who got me started in 1975, John Labarca, who taught me all about being a personality, being yourself, you know, laughing at yourself, and then there's John Griffin, who took me over to the dark side, you know, to see, you know what, you can be a little left to center, you know what I mean? And, you know, he was the first guy to do all those movie clips as what we called sweepers, you know, at the top of the hour. Sometimes we get requests to play There's a Lobster Loose. This is going back 35 years. So he hired me. And we immediately clicked as soon as we met each other. And I think it's because we're on the same age. He's a couple years older than I am, but still the same generation music-wise. And that was to do Psychedelic Sunday. So we met like in the summer, and then I started doing Psychedelic Sunday. I think it was in October I started doing that. And we became just very, very close. You know, it was like his right-hand man. When he would go away, he'd give me the beeper, you know.
Right.
Would give me jobs to do. You know, I was like his assistant, more or less, no title or anything. But he was great. Learned a lot from him, you know. His humor was definitely incredible.
What about those live wig-outs? I would always see a lot of beverages on the table. You guys weren't, you know, those weren't props.
No, they weren't. Actually, it got to a point. Now, I would have like little shots of water. I can't drink tequila. I mean, that just would kill me. That was impressive with him. He would take what's the size of the bottle? Like a Patron bottle.
Yeah.
Not the big one, but like the smaller one.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
At least 16 ounces.
I see. I know the prices. That one you're talking about is. Not the tiny one, the one in the middle, right?
There's right, the middle one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's $49.
Easily put that away.
I don't know how much is in there, but I know how much it costs.
but it's nothing that you drink in an afternoon. That's why I didn't drink at those things. And actually, towards the end, you know, I didn't at all because I just, you know, was driving and I just didn't want to deal with that. But he did. He, you know, he would get very, very... lively.
I got to tell you, it's just, you don't realize what a treat it is when you're going through it. But driving in and listening to you and him on a Friday afternoon getting hammered, but not sloppy, but where it's just fun and loose.
Well, you're talking back in the 90s.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. After we moved to Milford, then none of those shenanigans happened.
None of that happened. Yeah, this is Dixwell Avenue.
Dixwell Avenue, yeah, the best place, I'm telling you.
I'd come in the studio. I'd come in the complex. I'd start walking down the hall, and you could just smell the alcohol and whatever else.
And everything else in a fool.
And there's people everywhere, and it was, I don't know, it's just something about that felt right for rock radio at that time, you know?
Yeah, it was a good time.
Sam T.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah.
You know. What a guy. And he and I would, we would bump, well, you, we bump heads a lot. It did. But that's one thing. But when it came personal, he was the most lovable guy. He'd do anything for him.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, it was just, and his two boys are awesome. It's sad, you know. There's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end, you know. That happens in life, and it happens in career, you know. Just talking about, you know, Wiggy, same thing, you know, beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
You know, it was Sam with his life, you know, he got sick towards the end, and I think it's been almost 6 years now.
Has it been that long?
I think it has been, yeah. I know it was in October, and it was just a sad thing. But you know, Sam T., I'll tell you one thing. I don't know if you want to go into it, because we do have a lot of good street teamers. They are really good, and Drew does a great job. They take a little bit more liberties than the street teamers did under Sam T. Sam T. ran that like Army, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was you know, which was great, I'm telling you. These guys hopped to it, stood at attention, you know.
Your phone's cutting in and out. Are you on a cordless?
Hey, how's that?
Good.
There you go. There you go.
Look at that. Any station events that stand out? You've done so many over 35 years. But, yeah, I've been seeing some of these pictures get posted, and I saw one you're in a wrestling ring.
Yeah. Good old Steve Zine and Billy Wynn. And what was the name of the little person? God, you probably know who he is.
Was he a famous little person?
Yeah, wrestler.
Yeah.
You see him in wrestling, but this is, again, we're going back to the late 80s, or, you know, early 90s, because Lou Albano, you'll see him there.
Yes.
And I had to wrestle, was it Tiny the Terrible? Or something
so
like
wait,
that.
So wait, Wiggy was supposed to do it, right? And he chickened out?
Oh, that's a whole nother thing.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we have time for that one?
Yes.
All right, well, Tiny the Terrible, let me do that real quick. We did that, it was at Century Toyota. That's before Toyota Wallingford, our good pal Steve Zion's place. So part of the thing was I was going to wrestle, and him and Billy Wynn were the referees, and Tiny the Terrible was, I hate to say, they referred to him as a midget right. wrestler, okay? Right. And I got into the ring. Captain Lou Albano's there. I go, okay, let's go. And I get right down. And ding, hits the bell. I don't know what happened, but I was on the ground within about 7.5 seconds. This little guy came in and just decked me. But I'll go back to the Wiggy thing. So, you remember the TV show American Gladiators?
Yes.
Yeah, guys like Nitro and all those different names. They had a successful show. I think it was on ABC. And I guess this must have been early 90s as well. And it was coming to the New Haven Coliseum. And so one of the promotions that they came up with is that Wiggy was going to fight a lizard boss. All right, so there was a contest. Sign up, whatever. I know the guy, too. His name slips my mind. He lives in my complex. Anyhow, we did a contest. We got a winner. They're going to meet on the stands, and they fight with the pugil sticks. You're on top of those two, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Those two, you're elevated. You're up about 6 feet. You're
yeah, on this small little, almost like a pier.
Yeah. I forget what they call it, but you're on. Yeah, so it's like a round circle you'll stand on, and then your opponent is in front of you on the same kind of setup, and then you got these big, they look like giant Q-tips, these pugil sticks that you try to, you know, you hit the guy, whatever, to knock him off. That was the contest. So this was about a month before it was coming to town, and we're promoting the shit out of it. Wiggy's going to go there, you know. And all of a sudden, he comes in on Monday on crutches. He did something to his leg. I think it could have been a boating act, whatever.
Kaplan's boat.
Well, you know what? It got worse. Then, remember, we had an elevator in that building. He was coming in a wheelchair. So, all right, and I'm going, okay. I don't know where the hell this is going. You know, because remember, he only was on with me on Fridays. You know, he was on, you know, all afternoon. We would, you know, do the show together. So each time it's getting worse. So we come to the night of the show, Friday night, New Haven Coliseum. He comes out in the wheelchair, and I braverly said, "I'll stand in for you." You know, and I did, and I stood up. God, and I know this guy, and I'm just blanking on his name. John Hanlon, and I still know him. He's a good friend. This is over 30 years ago. And so he's on one end, I'm on the other. We got helmets on, and we start beating the shit out of each other on this to the point where we're sitting on we're sitting down because we couldn't take anymore because we're beating. No one's falling. He slips and falls, and I'm victorious. Okay, great. I went home that night. I swear to God, I thought I had a concussion. All right. Monday.
Oh, this isn't over.
Griffin comes in, walking in. It's a miracle. He's healed. He's out of the fucking wheelchair. And my head is still fucking throbbing from being beat. Get my head beat to a pulp. you know, I have a picture of that, too. I wonder if Drew's got that.
I was talking to Drew today. We did an event together, and he mentioned the ice thing. Remember, Wiggy was...
You know what? That I got... are you a little claustrophobic?
Very.
Okay, so am I. So you'll appreciate this. Okay, Toyota Wallingford, there we go, crazy radio events. We're going to put Wiggy in a block of ice for the weekend, okay? He goes in on Friday, and he stays there till Sunday for I don't know what. I know we were raising money to do something, and we did. So I went down to take a look at it, and I said, it was like going into a coffin. It was like being in a coffin, and you close in, and you can't get out. It was all ice, you know? And
this was inspired by something that David Blaine did or something, one of these guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he went down there. It was on a Friday, or maybe it was a Thursday. I can't remember when it was. I think he probably went in on a Thursday. Anyhow, but it wasn't a wig out Friday because we're going to do a wig out from there. So anyhow, make a long story short, he goes in. 4 hours later, I get a call, and it's him because he gets to take a break. He says, "Get me out of here." So I can't do this. I can't do this. I said, "What the fuck are you thinking in the first place? Come on." He was like that. He had these great ideas, you know, and all of them, most of them were good. But sometimes they just were like, man, what are you thinking?
Before I let you go, how long do you plan to stay? What is the future for Mike Lapatino?
Well, you know, like you, you know, we love what we do. You know, it's, as my father said, you know, find a job you love, you never work a day in your life.
By the way, your father was served his country with honor and
he's a great
man.
He and my mother are both buried in Arlington National Cemetery.
Yeah.
Which is an honor to go to. I got a nice special pass. I want to go down there to visit. You can drive in, and it's a beautiful place to go down anyhow to see. You know, it's a national monument. And I'm very proud to say that, you know, both my parents are there. But to me, I started doing this business 1976 was my first on-air break. It was Memorial Day weekend, 1976. And a great story because Gary Zenobia, he put me on. And he was listening, and it was kind of funny because I screwed up and everything. It was I can remember, and you can identify with this. You know how you get so fucking nervous, like
yes.
your stomach is in like triple knots, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like you know, and it's like holy mackerel. So that being said, I want to do 50 years, you know. So that would be 2026.
Nice.
That's what I'm worried. If the company will keep me, I mean.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be 50 years here.
But that's what I'm looking at. And then you know what I'd love to do after that? Is see if I can get a gig on WICC or one of our sister stations.
Right.
Doing a talk show.
Right. Oh, you'd be great at that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. But that to me is my plan. As far as I'm concerned, I got, you know, Margot, my oldest daughter. She's 35 now.
Oh, my God. I remember when she was born.
No. You remember when Laura and Sarah were born. Margo was already born when I got the PLR.
Is that right?
I had two kids after that.
Okay.
Laura and Sarah. Laura's, she's got her own PR firm in New York City, and Sarah is living down in Tampa. But Margo's up in Rhode Island, and I have two incredible grandkids, Maximus and Mia. Max and Mia.
Oh, that's great.
2.5. And these guys are my life, so I see them every Sunday. It's just awesome. So staying here, as far as I'm concerned, as long as they want me, I certainly want to be here. That's for sure.
What would you say to Connoisseur, Jeff, Kristen, Keith, and those guys now who are running the place?
I think they're doing an incredible job.
Yeah.
I really do. I think Jeff, who's very eccentric, you know, I don't mind saying that, which I love because that's what he's more into he loves the entertainment aspect of it.
Right.
You know, the fact that we can go out and touch people, you know, there's not many radio stations around that have live disc jockeys on as much as we do. And, because that's him. And, you know, Keith works hard. I never see him. And Kristen, I leave her alone. You know, she's in her, I don't want to be in her world because, you know, she's running the joint up there. She's got a lot of responsibility. What is it, 6 radio stations, for God's sakes.
Can you imagine? And
I can't imagine. No. That's why I stay out of review because I'm, you know, like she may say, well, who's his horse is this?
Yeah, who is that guy? He's still here?
Having fun, but, you know, but God bless her. She's, and this company, and I've said this many times, especially when I was stuck here at home during the pandemic, I have never seen a company that it went to the extremes of safety and still doing it with all the COVID stuff. Absolutely incredible.
You know, I'm glad I've been in the business long enough to know when I'm in a good spot.
But, absolutely. No, this is a great spot. It really is. And, again, working with everybody there, everybody's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're very lucky to have you. And I think what makes PLR so special is that it holds on to talent for so long. No one wants to leave. So
it's like Hotel California. you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
It's so true. Well, here's to another 50. And Mike, thanks for your friendship.
I love you, brother. You know,
love you too, man. Thanks for all the great memories in my car, just driving somewhere and listening to you talk up the
Let me
music.
Tell you, thank you for a lot of the great humor behind the scenes. Stuff I'll never forget.
Mike Lapatino, great to talk to you, brother.
All right, man. Thank you.